Thank you, Mark. And Mark, thank you for organizing this session, and thank you for getting the ball rolling on the fundamental changes. My main conclusion is that you need a pay raise. So, when we say easy concepts, hard definitions, well, an easy concept. Well, amylic epipenone really is sort of an easy concept. You think of grassland soils and dark and fertile and soft and Chernozem, but man, is it a hard definition. A fluvent, you know, we've got a floodplain, you know, it periodically floods and deposits. Easy concept, but man, how do you define it, you know, with the irregular distribution of carbon? And when we say soil taxonomy, a book with 100 authors, that gets to the whole point of, yeah, let's have uniform criteria across taxa. For example, the Paley in the alpha salts, the Paley U-douse versus the Paley U-dults in the ultra salts. Why can't we have something? Well, again, it's a book with 100 authors. You had the folks in the southeast out there arguing, you know, about this, and they come up with this local criteria, like, you know, Ken Sheffy was talking about. All of that builds in, and so, and this is a picture of at the Desert Project. There's Guy Smith and Lee Guile, and I think they're talking about soil moisture regimes in the suborders. But that's what I want to talk about, and we want to talk about, you know, to remove the moisture regimes from the suborder, put them on the family level, or to keep them. And regardless of the work impact that this would affect, just, you know, looking at it, what are the pros and cons? And so you will hear commonly that climate is a soil-forming factor. It's not a property like organic matter or percent clay or gravel content. And, you know, but that's true. But soil climate is a measurable soil property. And definitely there's a relationship between atmospheric meteorological climate and soil climate, but they're not the same. And the soil climate is not always easily inferred from climatic maps. Not yet. Okay. So this is one of the Russian books that translated into English that really deals with this soil climate versus climate concept. And this is even older Russian literature, 1930 through 34. But I think this is a great example of the experimental method, experimental pedology, in that you have a control. And so here they're measuring soil moisture down to 5 meters over this time period. And that's the experimental control. And then next to that is a treatment. And so so they run it for a while so you can compare the control and the treatment, and then they remove the oak trees. They cut the oak trees down, and that's what happens to the soil climate. The climate's the same, but now the soil climate is different. Okay, here's another example with respect to climate versus soil climate, and this is the effect of aspect. So you have the north-facing slopes, ponderosa pine, and adjacent to that, desert grassland. And so if you know, scurry up this mountain and make soil temperature measurements, like on the south-facing slope, where you'd have more of a thermic soil temperature regime, and then right across on the north-facing slope in the ponderosa pine, this would be the north-facing, and this is a year's worth of data at 5 centimeters. And this is how, you know, it reflects the seasonal change. And if you look at the south-facing, much different, okay? Big difference between those two. Now, can you get that off of PRISM data or some type of data? Not yet, but potentially you could in the future. But there's a difference between climate and soil climate. That's the point. And not only that, and you have these areas, a very important thing is runoff, run-in relationships. So you're upslope, you have a heavy rain, it runs downslope, and in this case, it floods a playa. And so now you've created a wetland, basically, that can stay there, you know, sometimes even an entire year. But less dramatic than that are these vegetative communities, the grasslands versus the shrublands. So here you are in a run-in position with a really robust Tabosa grass community. And as you go upslope where you're having runoff, you go into the creosote bush. So you're creating oostic conditions within what a mean annual precipitation GIS overlayer would tell you there really isn't any difference in the amount of moisture. But the soil really does see a big difference, and so do the plants. All right? And I put this up, the idea that no one measures soil moisture. Well, that's not exactly true. Soil moisture started being measured to get in to taxonomy as a definition. Back in, this started in 59 and continues today. But here's that complex definition of the aridic moisture regime in graphical form. And so you're looking at time on the horizontal axis and depth on the vertical axis. You have the soil moisture control section, which differs because roots differ and in respect to texture. So sandy soils are going to have a deeper and more stretched out soil moisture regime than clayey soils. But anyway, here's what's happening through time. There's a lot of variability, and you also see temperature at 50 centimeters. It comes into play. And the whole idea of bringing the temperature in is sometimes, and they talk in taxonomy about biological zero. Are these grasses not growing because it's too dry or because it's too cool? Just see in terms of the season, has it gotten warm enough yet? That addresses that whole issue, okay? But then, again, here is soil moisture for 1 year at a zoomed in scale. The idea is that it's so variable. There's so much variability. Well, there's variability in climatic data. If you put a meteorological station up, you've got a lot of rainfall events, you've got a lot of diurnal temperature, you've got big fronts moving through. Climate itself is dynamic, and soil climate is less dynamic than the meteorological climate, okay? And the rangeland ecologists recognize the importance of these subtle differences in moisture. And so, for example, here's a wetness index that Matt Levi, working at the Horonatos, put together. And a couple of examples of where soil moisture is being measured. And here we have, you know, a bigger and bigger networks. I put this up because it seems like there's a general perception that if a soil is saturated with water, then that is a soil property. But if soils are not saturated, if they're drier, then that's no longer a soil property. But if Jose was still here, I'd ask him in terms of being a microbial ecologist, what's really important to the habitat and the microorganisms? And I think, I don't know, but I think he might say soil moisture is definitely. Okay. So then it's been pointed out that the soil moisture regime is less important than frangipans, durapans, calcicut, other diagnostic horizons. But you could argue, define important. How do we define the word important? If we say, well, important, consequential, then we could say, well, you know, it really is important for soil genesis, and it's important, you know, we pointed out, for the ecosystems and, of course, for agriculture. And to me, this is the best. If I had to choose one figure from any pedology textbook to portray what's going on with respect to the relationship between climate and soil genesis, it's this. And you could extend that figure, you know, farther west here in the United States, and that Molochepipedon would get thinner and thinner and thinner and disappear and become an Ochrocepipedon, and the B horizon would get pedogenic carbonates in it. But that's the relationship in terms of genesis between the soil moisture regimes and morphology. I just scanned this out of Yenny's 1941 Factors of Soil Formation. This is in Ukraine, but earlier Mickey showed a Udall, and this is a beautiful Udall. You trace it all the way to the drier areas, and this is barely still a molycopropanone. This is an Ustall, okay, a little bit drier, and it'd become an erythritol. But here they are, and it's like, here's the issue. The folks in the East, you know, they make a good point. There's wasted space. And the folks in the West say it's not wasted space. It's critically important space. So that's the issue. And that if you scale back and look at the world in general, we really live on a very dry planet. If you look at Africa, just for example, you know, the aridic moisture regimes, the ustic, the xeric moisture regimes, one-third of the Earth's land surface. So, if we move it to the family level, it would simplify the system and reduce the number of subgroup taxa. But the information is still there, and that's the issue. Okay? But this idea of having more taxa, well, that's a bigger vocabulary. And a student entering college is not going to have as big a vocabulary, hopefully, as when they graduate. So as we learn more, we have a bigger vocabulary. And I would say the big thing is at the suborder, it's intelligible. So what do we mean? Well, bigger vocabulary. This is out of Marty Rabenhorst's SSSA journal. Journal article just got published, and basically he's showing the international committees and when they started, and as the international committees proceeded through time, we got more and more taxa. It seems to me that's a good thing. More taxa is a good thing. And is it complicated? Well, I think most people would agree that just given somebody who looks at that word and goes, my gosh, what? That's impenetrable. If you say, well, give it 3 minutes, listen, just 3 minutes, and we're going to talk about Greek and Latin root words, and after that, there's a tremendous amount of information there. But the idea of intelligible, okay, so what Jose, made a point about going from the general to more specific for the kingdom and the phylum. For us, it'd be the orders, the suborders, and you have these big groups that get progressively subdivided. That's intelligible. And here is a map that Sharon Waltman put together, and these are the suborders and their moisture regimes. That's intelligible. At least it is for me at a broad scale, at a broad taxonomic scale. There are the mollisol suborders, the alfasol suborders, the ultrasol suborders, but very intelligible. And then going back to Buell-Holm and Kraken, the early book, the first, and even still, at the very end, just having the suborders based on some simple climatic and, you know, easy figures, mollisols, grassland soils of the steppes and prairie, easy, block diagrams. But I would say, and I would always give this to students on test, you know, they could get it. They could really fill in the blanks, and they could really start making sense at a taxonomy. And not a new issue. This is an old issue. It has been pointed out. You look in the guy, is soil climate a soil property? That's, you know, Guy Smith said, if you put a thermometer in the soil and you measure it, is that not a property? It's a dynamic property, but still, is it not a physical property of that soil? So here we are, and I think this is the issue that we're looking at. And again, my conclusion is that Mark Stolt deserves a pay raise. Thank you.